Good evening and welcome to the new people here at Machon Meir. Our class tonight is going to be in the book of prophets, in the book of Shmuel. It's a new semester, new faces, some new faces. We're going to do some quick intro. If you've heard this before, I believe if you pay close attention, you'll see there are things you might not have heard before. So there are concepts which are elementary to Judaism. One of those concepts is there's Hashem, God created the world. Another concept is that Hashem connects to mankind. He talks to us. That concept is called Nevuah. Nevuah comes from the word Nivsfatayim, speech. Nevuah is a root onto its own. The idea that Hashem speaks to a human being and connects to him, that man doesn't go insane. It is a concept that we don't understand. Because if you think about it, it defies our logic. Why would God, who's infinite, create a world, and why would He communicate with man? And that's why the first commandment had to be heard by us directly, explains the Ran. Because when we heard God talking to us, that sort of proved it, that God does talk to man. You could argue why yes and why no, but there's a reality. The reality is He does. And now we had that definitive understanding, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted. When Hashem sent Moshe to the Jewish people, Moshe didn't want to go. He said, why should they believe me? And Hashem said, on this mountain here at Sinai, where you're seeing the sneh, the burning bush, you will be here and all the people will have prophetic vision. And after that, they will not doubt you again. And so the Jewish people had, all of us, prophetic vision at Sinai. Now, prophetic vision is generally something that is witnessed by the soul. However, we also have a concept called Shekhinah. We have a concept where Hashem makes something physical apparent to mankind, explains the Rambam. Although Rambam stresses that prophetic vision is seen with the soul, it's not the naked eye that's seeing a vision. However, there are aspects of revelation which are perceived by the physical human. And so Rambam says it breaks into two. There's the core prophecy, which we say is seen by the soul, and the interpretation is the neshama. But there's also something which Hashem makes at Sinai. There was something physical happening. It wasn't only spiritual, right? They heard the trumpet blast. There was noise. There was physical things there too. There was physical. There was spiritual. There was a lot going on at Sinai. So the Jewish people had prophetic vision at that point, and from that point onward, it was solidified. There is prophecy. We heard the first two commandments on our own. Now, Hashem creates the world. Adam, Eve, 10 generations. Noah, flood, 10 generations. Avram, we have Abraham. 1948 from creation, 1948 years after creation, Avram comes to the world. Avram is a child prodigy. He can convince people to follow him, and that's why Avram is called Avram, the master of the Aramean people. He was the nemesis of Nimrod the king, because Nimrod told the people that he was a god, and Avram was able to gain such a following that he was viewed as a leader in Aram. And so he was incarcerated. Nimrod puts him in jail for 7 years. And then he tells him, bow to me. And Avram won't. And he says, if you won't accept me as a deity, I will burn you alive. And he gathers people to this huge coliseum. And Avram is brought with his brother Haran and told, bow or die. And Avram says, I won't bow. Now this isn't good for Nimrod. He has all the people watching, so he needs to have Avram burn at the stake so at least he can regain his following, and that doesn't work. We know the miracle of Ur Kasdim, the fire of Kasdim. Avram is thrown into the furnace and he walks out unscathed, and the opposite happens. And so Avram, the name Avram, means father of the Aramean people. The Arameans, the Aram, looked up to Avram. And so Avram had a tremendous following. And that's what Hashem tells him when He sends him to Israel. He says, take the people you created. Because when people burn their children and do all kinds of paganistic activities, they're destroying their life, and Avram gave them life. He gave them monotheism. And he takes this huge following with him and he emigrates to Israel. And now Avram fathers Yitzchak at age 100. Yitzchak has two children, Yaakov and Esav. And then the vision in which Avram was told, your descendants will go down and be enslaved, and then the fourth generation will come back, is fulfilled in Yaakov. Technically, Yaakov and Esav are twins. Who's the continuation of Avram? Well, Yaakov is clearly the continuation, because that's what we just said on Pesach. Yaakov fulfills the prophecy that the descendants will go down and be enslaved and return and conquer the land of Israel. And so we come back to the land of Israel in the year 2448 of creation. And now Joshua leads us in. Moshe passes away. He's 120 years old. And Yoshua leads us into Israel. We spent 7 years conquering, 7 years dividing the land of Israel. And Yoshua passes away. There are pockets of enemies in our midst. And we enter the period of judges. There is no clear leadership among the Jewish people. We will spend the next two centuries under the different judges who will lead us time and again to remove the yoke of our oppressors, our enemies from within and our enemies from without. If we begin with Othniel ben Kenaz, Othniel ben Kenaz, the first judge from the tribe of Judea who leads us to war, and then we move on. We have the famous story of Ehud, right? The story of Ehud kills Eglon, the king of the Moabites, the corpulent king. He throws his spear into his stomach. He assassinates him. He brings his troops. They capture the Jordanian pass. And then they eradicate all the soldiers from within Israel, the Moabite soldiers from within Israel. And then we move on. We have the story of Devorah, who goes together at that juncture in Jewish history. Sisera from the north. We can give these out. Please give them back at the end of class. Want to pass those out, please? We have over here the map. So our next enemy is going to be Yavin, the king of Hatzor, from up north, comes down with his troops. And Barak ben Avinoam leads the great war to... he does not lead without Devorah, the female prophetess, and together they lead us to victory as there are flash floods in the Kishon Valley. In the Kishon Valley, where Sisera and his men are, they are swept away by the floods, and Devorah sings her famous song about the great Jewish victory. We have the story of Gideon, thank you, very good. Gideon, who is overtaken by the Midianites, the tribes of the east, come swooping in and they take over all of our crops. And Gideon, who is on the eastern side of the Jordan, he's from the tribe of Manasseh up north. And Gideon leads the Jewish people to victory with a very small army, 700 men. He's heavily outnumbered, 100-1. He has the miraculous victory where he stands there with the trumpets, 100 men, right? He ends up with 300 men. He goes to war. 100 men on each camp. They attack at midnight. They blow their trumpets. They break their earthenware vessels. The Midianite enemy doesn't know what's going on. They start running, they start bumping into one another, and Gideon has a tremendous, miraculous victory against the Midianites. We move on to the story of Yiftach. Yiftach is also from the eastern side of the Jordan. He's chased away by his relatives, and then Yiftach is summoned when they're attacked. And Yiftach leads the people against the Moabites, Ammonites, to a great victory when they come and they want to take the land of Israel away from us, or the eastern side of the Jordan away from us. And then Yiftach has the tragic story of his daughter who comes out to greet him. He promises, the thing that will greet me I will offer to Hashem. And then he does the foolish thing of sacrificing his own daughter. The people of the tribe of Ephraim attack Yiftach over this. There's civil war. Yiftach kills tens of thousands of Jews, and then Yiftach dies a gruesome death where his body falls apart, and Yiftach is buried throughout the region of Gilad, the eastern side of the Jordan, Gilad, where many murderers live. We go afterwards, we skipped one judge, we skipped Gideon's son. Remember Avimelech, the son of Gideon, he was a judge, he was cunning, he went to the people of where? Shechem, He said to them, I'm from the concubine who comes from you. Give me money and the leader of Israel will be your relative. They give him money. He kills his 70 brothers on one stone. He slaughters all his brothers. And then he takes the leadership of the people of Shechem and then the people of Israel. He has one brother, Yosam, who says the famous allegory. He says all the trees were looking for a ruler. They went to all the wonderful trees, to the grapevine, to the olive, to the fig tree. Every one of them said, I have too much to produce. I can't waste my time being your king. So they go to the thorn bush who produces nothing and they say, you be our king. And the thorn bush says, if you guys are all serious, I'll be your king. Well, you guys, if you were fair in what you did to appoint Avimelech, let this kingship succeed. But if what you did was vile, you turned against my father who saved all of you and you murdered all his children, well then let a fire come from him and burn you, and let a fire come from you and burn him, and his curse comes true. 3 years later, ill will erupts between Avimelech and the people of Shechem. Avimelech attacks the people of Shechem and destroys them. He plants the city with salt, and as he is destroying the people of Shechem, he himself is killed and the war ends. That's the gruesome story of Avimelech. After Yiftach, we have the story of Ruth, and we run forward. We're going to go into the story of Samson. We all know the story of Samson, his great might, and Samson is the final judge in the book of Judges. He fights the Philistines for 20 years until finally Delilah convinces him to give away his secret. His strength comes from his long hair. She shaves his long hair, and then the Philistines take him and torment him and torture him until they bring him to this big Colosseum to mock him. They have a huge roof. Everyone's standing there praising their idol Dagon. And Samson asks Hashem to give him back the wages of one of the eyes they gouged out. And he pulls down the two pillars that the building is resting on and kills scores of the Plishtim. His family digs out his body from the rubble. They take him back home and bury him. And when the Philistines clear all the rubble, they don't find Samson. So they're sure he's still lurking out there. And for the next 20 years, the Philistines behave themselves. They're very scared because they're convinced that Samson is still lurking somewhere. After that, we finish the book of Judges with the two terrible stories of Pesel Micha, the idol of Micha. A man establishes an idol. The tribe of Dan believe in that idol, and they take that idol as they conquer the northern part of Israel, where they establish a second territory for the tribe of Dan. And so the tribe of Dan will have an idol in their midst till the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, or the destruction of Shiloh, for many, many years to come. Then we have the story of the concubine on the hilltop. A woman who's married to the leader of Israel is violated, and then the people of Israel go to war against the tribe of Benjamin for not taking the people to task over the violation. There's tremendous civil war. Tens of thousands of Jews die, and finally the Jewish people end the book of Judges with reuniting with the tribe of Benjamin and saying, let's rebuild the tribe of Benjamin. We cannot lose a tribe from the people of Israel. And with that, we conclude the book of Judges. Now we move into the book of Shmuel. In the beginning of the book of Shmuel, our judge is Eli, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. The Mishkan is located in Shiloh. Can you guys find Shiloh on the map? You see Shiloh right here in the north of Ephraim. And there is a man named Elkanah. He is a descendant of Korach, a very pious person. Elkanah is a prophet. He has two wives, a beautiful wife named Pnina and a wife who looks like a monkey named Hannah. And Hannah has a huge distortment in her face, and Pnina always torments Hannah, and Hannah's crying. Eli sees her in her prayer and crying, and he thinks that she's walked into the temple drunk. He asks her, lady, till when will you walk around drunk in the temple? She says, no, what kind of prophet are you? You don't know what's going on here. I'm so embittered by what's happened to me. He blesses her. Her prayer should be accepted. His blessing comes true. It is Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, Hannah gets redeemed, and she has an amazing son who is equated with both Moshe and Aaron, Shmuel. She sings her famous song of praise and honor of Hashem, that people should never let life get them down. Even when you think you're down, people who are on bottom, Hashem listens to them and helps them get to the top. And every time Hannah gives birth to a child, Pnina buries two. So her happiness is a limited happiness. Her husband and co-wife, whatever, are in mourning every time. Shmuel grows up to be a great prophet for the people of Israel. He is living on temple grounds together with Eli, his mentor. And Eli has two sons, Hophni and Pinchas. Hophni and Pinchas are not behaving so well. Hophni and Pinchas, well, they, every time there's a sacrifice, they make sure to get fresh meat. And the people of Israel, who used to look up to the temple, are starting to look askantly at what's going on there, because the Kohanim are taking care of getting their own meat before the sacrifices are offered properly. And so Elkanah, Shmuel's father, has the unpleasant task of coming to Eli, who's the one that is bringing up his son, who's the one that blessed him he should have a child, and telling him that God is going to punish him for what he's done. And Eli accepts it, and he tries to rebuke his kids, and they don't listen. And then Shmuel gets his first prophecy, and Hashem tells Shmuel, Eli's going to bury both his sons on the same day, and a terrible thing will happen in Israel. And Eli again accepts the curse, and Hashem tells him that his future generations, he will lose the right to be the leader of the Kohanim, his descendants will lose the rights to be Kohanim Gdolim, and his descendants will all die young. Terrible curse. And Eli accepts what God has said, and then war breaks out. We lose the first battle. To the second battle, they decide to bring out the Aron, the Ark, and they lose that battle as well. The Ark is taken into Philistine territory for 7 months. The Philistines are plagued. Everywhere the Ark goes, people have trouble. They can't take care of their bodily needs. When they go to the bathroom, mice climb into their intestines. People are dying right and left. They send back the Ark, and the Ark comes to Beit Shemesh. Now we move forward. Shmuel is leading the Jewish people. Hashem has told Shmuel to anoint our first king, Saul. And that is basically where we got up to last semester. So we just took 15 minutes and we recapped from creation to King Saul. Okay? Guys, let's remember what we said. Creation, 10 generations Noach, 10 generations Avram. We explained why Avram was called Avram. He was a master in Aramean territory. His descent, his ascent to Israel, 400 years we leave Egypt. We enter Israel 7 and 7, right? 7 to conquer, 7 to divide. After Joshua, we went through the different judges, right? We spoke about Osniel ben Kenaz, Devorah's song, Ehud ben Gera, right? The lefty who assassinates the king Eglon. We spoke about Gidon, right, who fights the Midianites. We spoke about Gidon's son, Avimelech. We spoke about how he assassinated all his brothers. We spoke about Yiftach and how he offered his own daughter. We spoke about Samson and his downfall and bringing down the house. We moved on to the story of Elkanah. And now we are up to the story of Shaul HaMelech. So Shaul is one of the most pious people that ever walked the face of the earth. Shaul is called Kushi. He is unusual. Kushi means one who stands out. Shaul stands out because he is different than everyone else in his piety. Throughout Tanakh, Kushi means one who is unusually pious. Everywhere you see the word Kushi, you see it where? You see it by Tzipora, Moshe's wife. It means she was unusually pious. You see it where else? That's the pshat that the Gemara says and Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says. Where else do you see it? Shaul is called Kushi. The young man who runs to tell David that that his son Avshalom was killed is called Kushi because he's very pious. Baruch ben Neriah is called Kushi. And one more, the Jewish people are all called Kushi in the book of Amos. Thank you.
So we're moving.
What?
Does it mean black people?
It also means that.
Isn't it also?
What is the 2 meanings? Like, what's the...
That's a good question. Maybe it's telling you something.
Jewish people are black.
Or there's a correlation. Maybe there is a correlation. No. Maybe there's a correlation. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there is a shared something shared there.
Isn't it also Shlomo two advisors?
Shlomo. Let's move on. So Shaul is very often viewed in the context of his challenges with David. Shaul is very often viewed in the context of his failings, his shortcomings, right? His fatal flaw. Shaul doesn't kill Amalek the way he's told. Shaul doesn't wait for Shmuel before going to war. Shaul was extraordinarily pious. He's going against the whole army, and there are two swords, okay? He has a sword, and his son has a sword. Everyone else is fighting with what? With their plowshares, with their hoe. Go to battle against the greatest army, the Philistines, who have chariots and weapons. And who goes to such a battle? And Shaul is willing. God said so, he's willing to go. I ask a simple question. Would we join his forces? Imagine the prophet walks in today and says, go into Syria and go fight Putin. Go. And you'll say, with what? And he'll say, take your glasses. Beat him up with your glasses. No, who's going to listen? And would any of us have the courage to actually go? But the prophet said so. Yeah, but it seems suicidal. Shaul's accepting the throne at that juncture of Jewish history was suicidal. Shaul was against an army where he didn't stand a chance. He had nothing. It would be no different than going into Syria today with a pair of glasses to fight the war. Good luck. So Shaul is extraordinarily pious and extraordinarily successful as a military leader. He fights many battles, and all of this is lost because we all remember his shortcomings. So we have to know how great Shaul was. And in essence, Shaul actually is the father of the Davidic dynasty. Well, not really. It didn't end up being that way. But his daughter marries David. Meaning David marries Michal Bat Shaul, who's also extraordinarily.
No kids.
Until the day she dies. It says, Ad Yom Mosat, till the day she died. So we start the story of Shaul. We learned about how Shaul was looking for his father's lost animals, donkeys probably, something like that.
She wasn't saying the kid was. Who was the kid?
That's a good question. Look it up. It's a Gemara in Yuma, I think. Pretty sure, yeah. Or Sanhedrin. Maybe Sanhedrin. Look, or remind me, I'll look. So, Shaul takes the throne. He's anointed by Shmuel. We learned this already. Shmuel had the prophetic vision that Shaul would show up. He's anointed. Shmuel warns him, wait till I come. We'll offer a sacrifice together, and then you'll go to war. And that's really where we're holding. Shaul sees the Philistines are getting their armed forces. They're moving. They're ready for battle. And Shmuel didn't show up. And he's under pressure. He has a tiny army. And the people are starting to leave. They see he's not going to war. And Shaul is under pressure. And from here, the next classes we're going to have, from here I would say almost till then, maybe till the end of the semester, are going to be very exciting. Many stories now, the whole continuation of Tanakh, the book of Shmuel, the book of Kings, it's all stories with very exciting and interesting details. And what we have to remember when we learn these stories is the rule that there were millions of prophets in the Jewish people. As the Gemara tells us in Masechet Megillah, millions of prophets. And they didn't get recorded. The only prophecies that got recorded were those that had an eternal message. Those that we read today and we will read forever because their message is eternal. And so when we read these stories, we have to take care not to think we're reading a history book, not to think we're reading an exciting novel. We're reading a prophetic description of what happened there. Out of King Saul's life, we get a description of probably 10 sentences that he said his whole life. We see certain actions, you get a very, very small snippet of Shaul's life when you read the Navi. So what are we being taught? We're being taught what we need to know. There's a lot of historical facts that are left out because that you didn't need to know. The Navi isn't here to teach us history. The Navi is here to teach us how to live. The Navi is here to give us a guidebook for life. And so when we read these stories, we have to remember that this was written with prophecy, with the intention of teaching us. And so we have to look within the story and realize the most basic thing we learn from the stories is the realization that Hashem is running the show. The realization that whether you win or lose is not defined solely by your military might. Hashem pulls the strings. And the Navi gives us that perspective that you can look at the story and the Navi reveals to you, why did this happen? Why did A have to hit B? Why did B have to hit back A? Why did this nation take down the Jewish people? Why did the Jewish people get back up? The Navi gives you the behind the scenes. He teaches you how to look at life. He teaches us how to read the newspaper. When you see an article and you realize there's something going on up north, you start realizing after you learn Navi, this is how Hashem runs the world. There's a concept of Hashem wants something to happen, and at the tip, at the upper part of the pyramid is the Jewish people. We're supposed to move the world in certain directions, and Hashem affects us by making all kinds of things happen in the world all around us. So, why did Trump come up to power? Well, part of the plan was what's going to happen with the Jewish people. It's not just the media that says we're at the center of attention. Chazal teaches us, and the Navi teaches us, that it says when King Shlomo married a non-Jewish woman, on that day, the angel Gabriel went and laid the foundations for the Roman Empire that would come down to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Because King Shlomo, it says that's when Gabriel went to plant the seeds. So we don't look at the Roman Empire as something that that just happened. We say no, the seeds were planted a millennium earlier with a certain plan, and so on. So we, again, coming back to our story, we're holding with Shaul under immense pressure. His army is deserting him. The enemy is attacking him. And he knows he's supposed to wait for the Navi Shmuel, but he doesn't want to go to war without bringing the sacrifice. What's he supposed to do? That's where we will pause and continue Be'ezat Hashem next week, Sunday night.